You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 26th of November, 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Normally, we would be live. Today, we are pre-recorded because it is Thanksgiving, so a happy Thanksgiving to all our American listeners out there. And we do have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson today. Matt, good day, sir. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, sometimes I forget that non-Americans don't have this holiday. The Canadians have it in October. And so I just assume you guys have Thursday off too, but you don't have this holiday blessing like we do.
No, it's a normal work day for me and for the rest of us here in Britain. But I'm sure we'd like to actually hear what it's based around. We have a harvest festival is always the tradition that we had, which was in about September time, which was all about the fruits of the harvest and the bountiful harvest that would tide us over for the winter. And I always sort of assumed that Thanksgiving was something similar to that. But could you tell us just what the actual surroundings of it is, the myth behind it, the story behind it?
Well, it is a harvest festival. And, you know, in 1621, this first happened. It was explicitly stated as a harvest festival. This is about the Plymouth settlers. By the fall of 1621, they were doing well for the first time. That was a year, and they were starving. So as Governor Bradford quoted scriptures on this, that, you know, a pious people will be blessed this way. You know, other political leaders of the time, like Winslow, says, and I'm quoting from him directly. He says, "We've found the Indians very faithful and their covenant of peace with us, very loving and ready to please us." This was, you know, close to Martha's Vineyard, and it looks like maybe about 90 from that tribe actually showed up. It seems that they did was fish, Indian corn, and turkeys were a part of this. Venison, I think, was a dominant meat there. And in his reports back to England, he said, "This is, you know, we're not exaggerating this, but this is very positive. You know, we're finally at a time of peace and plenty here." And it was very brief. But they actually come out and says, "You know, this is about, you know, finally having some kind of prosperity after almost starving." So as far as the Indians are concerned, they had 90 and 100 men. They stayed 3 days. They killed 5 deer, which they presented to Bradford, Standish, and the rest of the Plymouth elite. And they said, you know, "We are very, very far from want," they say. Now, of course, the peace didn't last. And of course, Squanto is a famous Indian who spoke English, who acted as the guide to the Plymouth colony, was a diplomat, kind of smoothed over problems with the other tribes. But, you know, when the white people came to America, they had as many allies as they did enemies. As some tribes wanted to use them to settle scores, and they were always at war with one another. And so, you know, that's the basic story. And ever since then, you've had different presidents decreeing you know, a Thanksgiving day. I mean, Lincoln certainly did it. And it seems that any healthy society should have a day. Obviously, it would be in the fall for us because of the harvest, where you give thanks for what you have. And in general, it's a very healthy thing. In the U.S., though, it has more to do with football and getting ready for people to spend billions of dollars for the Christmas rush, seems that Black Friday is far more important than Thanksgiving Day, which is a day of collective insanity among Americans, where they cram stores because they're practically giving away merchandise just for that one day. There's always fistfights and everything else. They actually go absolutely crazy. I've never done it myself, but it's almost like a ritual cleansing of violence that Americans do at all the big box stores and chains. And so that seems to have overtaken actual Thanksgiving, but it is a legitimate, very old feast day for Americans.
So it's basically a shared feast between the Indians and the settlers, and it was a brief respite of peace in between wars with the Indians, or did the wars come after the Thanksgiving, or were they before?
We had both. And it was a brief peace. Again, Squanto had a lot to do with this, being the main guide. And he was a member of the Patuxet, I think that's how you say it, Patuxet tribe that doesn't exist anymore, again, because of diseases. And he was actually pretty central in making sure that the initial settlers knew how to talk to the Indians, they knew how to trade with them, they knew how to. So initially, it wasn't a negative relationship, except unfortunately for diseases, which, you know, they had no moral blame in spreading.
Well, it seems to me that the settlers, the Puritans, the colonists, you know, they really tried to Christianize these Indians at first, but the Indians really weren't interested in it, or the majority of them weren't interested in it. They just wanted to revert back to savagery. And we're not told this. There's a lot of myths surrounding this Thanksgiving, and it's a time of year when people will talk about colonization, about wars against the Indians, about the peaceful Indians. Well, let's have a look at these myths then and bust some of them. And the first one is, did Europeans steal America from the natives? Throughout much of history, including the 1600s, it was normal for a conquering army to claim the lands of their defeated foe. This is a practice that goes right back into antiquity with the Persians, Greeks, Romans, Egyptians, Israelis, Chinese, and many other cultures taking part. And of course, mentions the Israelis there because, yeah, they are doing the same thing today. Taking land by conquest was also a part of Native American culture. Creek Indians conquered land from the Choctaws, Chickasaws, and Creeks. Comanches came in and took the land from the Apaches by war. Aztecs, Incas, and Mayans all grew their empires by conquering lands from other tribes. The Tinos and Kanib tribes fought over land. When Spain defeated the Aztec Empire, they did so with an army of 1,000 Spanish soldiers and 75,000 soldiers from the Chaxclans, Cholotecs, and Totonac tribes. The practice of claiming the land of conquered enemies extended well past the colonization of America. It wasn't until the conclusion of World War II in 1945 that Western culture shunned the practice. And even then, the Soviet Union claimed Poland, Bulgaria, Romania, Hungary, Austria, and many other territories as part of their victory spoils. To claim the white Europeans stole America from the native tribes is to force the cultural norms of the past 50 years that white Europeans themselves created onto events that happened hundreds of years earlier. This is just ignorant. I mean, it's incredible that they can say that, people can say that today, that Europeans stole the land from the natives. They won it fair and square. There was a battle, there was a war, and instead of just wiping out the Indians, we actually gave them reservations. We were very good to them. What do you make of this first myth here, Matt, that the Europeans stole America from the natives?
Well, one of my favorite lines here is when he says, you know, forcing the cultural norms of the past 50 years onto things that happened hundreds of years ago. I've always said that this is the sign of the amateur or over-emotional historian, is that he believes that moral norms were the same in terms of things like this, 200 years ago as they are today. It was not a negative thing to conquer a people and rule them as a colony. You always had anti-colonial forces. You certainly had them in Ireland for a long time. But it wasn't this horrible, you know, imperialism is the greatest of all evils. Today, of course, you still have it, but they just call it different names. You know, the Bretton Woods Agreement, they're controlling people through debt. But of course, the Soviet Empire was rarely called an empire throughout the Cold War, even though it was in every respect. The other thing to notice is that, especially in Central America, whether it be the Aztecs, Incas, Mayans, all of these were slave trading imperial entities that, with only a handful of soldiers from Spain, mostly even adventurers from Spain, overthrew them very quickly. And the reason they could do that is that, as you mentioned, the overwhelming majority of their force were from those smaller tribes that were under the control of the dominant metropole. And that's a very simple argument to make. If you've seen Mel Gibson's Apocalypto, which I strongly recommend, it gets into that in great detail. These were colonial forces that rose up with the help of the Spanish against the main dominant, whether it be Incas or whoever it was. That's what kind of empire this was. There weren't that many in America proper. The population was fairly low. They had a very low level of technology. And the English came over, and it didn't take much for the wars to start, and they simply had no chance. They were too primitive of a group of people to put up any kind of a fight.
Well, it was seen as the forces of civilization struggling against the forces of barbarism. That was the way that it was seen, order fighting against chaos, and with good reason as well. Another problem with the white people stole America from the natives mentality is that it is insulting to Native Americans. It portrays them as ignorant fools easily duped by the evil white man, when in fact the brave Native American tribes fought hard, vicious battles to preserve their lands. The United States Census Bureau in 1894 counted over 40 wars involving white Americans and Native Americans between the years 1789 and 1846, which killed 19,000 whites and about 30,000 Indians. So the Europeans paid for that land with their blood, which is how all territories are conquered and turned into a homeland. It's paid with your ancestors' blood. During these wars, Native Americans committed atrocities against the white settlers, where slaughtering whole towns, raping, scalping, and murdering children were regular acts. During the Pontiac's War in 1764, four Delaware Indian warriors entered a settler's log schoolhouse. There they killed and scalped the teacher and nine children. Two children were scalped, but survived their injuries, and four other children were taken prisoners. This is the first school massacre on record in America, and it happened before America was even a nation. And I suspect that that was just one example among many. I mean, these were barbaric, savage tribes that were involved in human sacrifice, as well as scalping and kidnapping children and torturing the people that they kidnapped to death. I mean, horrific things that actually went on here. But it was seen as order fighting against chaos, and that is the way that it should be seen today, I think. Don't you, Matt?
No, I completely agree. People forget that at this early date, you know, even the late 17th century, there were a tiny handful of white people in the eastern United States. The Spanish, when they overthrew the empires in Central America, there were a tiny handful of these guys. And over time, of course, that number grew, but it was a matter of technological superiority. And beyond that, of course, disease and the fact that, you know, imperialist tribes like the Apaches or these empires we mentioned before had all kinds of colonial subjects that were more than willing to use whites to settle scores. So wherever white people went, even in this early date, they had as many allies as enemies. If they weren't fighting whites, they'd be fighting each other. These weren't peaceful hippies at their own version of Woodstock, as we're all taught. They were quite the opposite. There were no different than any other hunter-gatherer groups out there. And you could say that whites benefited Indians as much as they harmed them. And there's no question about that at this point. But every Thanksgiving, we have the white people is evil mantra rammed down our throats.
Well, many of them were actually killed by disease, as you point out there, Matt, rather than by war. And there's a myth that there were these smallpox blankets and the evil white man deliberately infected blankets with smallpox. But the evil white man didn't know about germs at the time. So that's another myth that can be just thrown away there about the smallpox blankets. But a lot of them were actually killed by disease. For the most part, Indians were infected by devastating diseases even before they had made direct contact with the Europeans. Other Indians who had already been exposed to the germs carried them with them to virtually every corner of North America, and many British explorers and settlers found empty, abandoned villages, as did the Pilgrims, and greatly reduced populations when they first arrived. Sympathy for Native Americans and admiration for their cultures in no way requires a belief in a European or American genocide. As Jared Diamond's book and countless others make clear, the mass migration of Europeans to the New World and the rapid displacement and replacement of native populations is hardly a unique interchange in human history. On six continents, such shifting populations, with countless cruel invasions and occupations and social destructions and replacements, have been the rule rather than the exception. The notion that unique viciousness to Native Americans represents our original sin fails to put European contact with these struggling Stone Age societies into any context whatsoever, and only serves the purposes of those who want to foster inappropriate guilt, uncertainty, and shame in young Americans. A nation ashamed of its past will fear its future. As I say, the diseases weren't, that was not deliberately done. It happened by mistake. We didn't know, you know, how these things worked. We didn't know how germs worked. We had no idea that so many of them were actually going to be killed by disease. But it certainly wasn't malicious. What do you make of this disease allegation here, Matt?
Well, once it became clear that this wasn't any kind of deliberate policy to wipe these people out, they, you know, had to settle. They had to acknowledge the fact that disease did most of the damage. Now, there were plenty of white people who were suffering from smallpox at the time, of course. But the whole blanket thesis, and I was taught this explicitly in school, there's absolutely no evidence of this whatsoever. It could never work. The virus doesn't. The smallpox itself doesn't last very long outside of the body. The blankets would have to be freshly infected. Like, people are going to use, you know, pus-covered blankets. This is absolutely ridiculous. There is one letter from someone in a fort under siege by the American Indians that mentions that this may be an idea to deliberately infect them. And that was it. There's one letter. It wasn't a policy. It was, you know, he's just a soldier, you know, wanting revenge on these people. That's all it comes down to. But people like Ward Churchill and others started using, you know, germ warfare as how America was conquered. It's absolutely ridiculous. But in the U.S., especially in the 20th century, Indians have a reputation. They have a reputation for being very brave, of being, you know, fanatical in warfare. They were used as trackers. I mean, especially down in the American South. The five civilized tribes were the largest slaveholders in America, and they were also very important in slave tracking. This is the reputation that they've always had. You know, the Washington Redskins, the football team, the Indians did come out and say this is a perfectly legitimate representation. The warrior that they depict is strong and no different than any other warrior. It was white liberals who demanded that mascot be removed. And now it's actually called, for those of you who don't know, the Washington Football Team is the actual name of it, to get rid of the Redskins. This isn't Indians talking about this. This is white liberals in corporate America demanding this. So it's just one myth upon another, and it's just it's more to do with white liberals demanding all of this and having Americans hate themselves rather than any kind of, you know, desire for justice.
Yeah, I think the Europeans honored the Indians, didn't they? What do we have? Apache attack helicopters, Tomahawk missiles. I mean, what other people have named their weaponry after the foe that they have vanquished? I mean, it's a very magnanimous thing to do. Another thing that people do is they will look around, they'll see how many people are there in America now, and they'll say, whoa, there must have been millions of these Native Americans, these Red Indians that were massacred, because look how much space there is here. There must have been so many of them. Well, that's a lie as well. The Native Americans who lived in what is now the contiguous 48 states had a very low population density to begin with. not like what is now Latin America, where there were the Aztecs and the Incas and all the rest, and where most of the present population are still largely of Native American ancestry, except for Argentina, Costa Rica, and Brazil. While many Native Americans died of disease brought from Europe, this was not done intentionally. There was a sincere attempt to bring the Native American peoples into European culture and Christianity. The Wampanoags, who were the Native Americans who went to the first Thanksgiving, began to relearn their language in 1993 after 150 years of not being able to speak it. The language had not actually been lost because there were still Bibles and other documents written in their language. So this proves that the colonists, the Europeans, they were trying to Christianize these people. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been making Bibles in the language of these Indians. So this shows that we didn't go there trying to oppress these people or go there in some form of conquest. We went there and saw that these people there, and we tried to bring them civilization and tried to Christianize them. What do you make of this bit here, Matt?
Well, if you read Thomas Jefferson's Notes on the State of Virginia, he treats the, you know, especially the larger, more powerful Indian tribes with great respect. There was really never a contempt for them, at least from a political point of view. They were very primitive, but they had a tremendous amount of virtue in other respects. Now you read a book like Scalp Dance, and you don't feel that way about all of them. But this was the nature of warfare. The left wants to claim that 90% of the Indians in America were wiped out in the first few decades of white settlement. So that means they have to come up, given the number of Indians living, they have to come up with a gigantic number, something like 2 million, which their economy and tribal structure could never have supported. Population estimates go anywhere from, I don't know, 500,000 to 1 million. I've even heard 100,000. And for, you know, pre-Columbian, well, Central America in that case, but even the rest of America, not that high. But if they want to say that 95% were slaughtered, they have to come up with a number of 20 million to make it all work out mathematically. But their economy could never support that. Their economy was their population was low, it was scattered, and they were really a subsistence people.
Yeah, they didn't have any agriculture, did they? They weren't farmers, so they could only breed to what they could find without actually farming. So there really can't have been that many of them. They certainly didn't have farming machinery, farming implements. So a little more than Stone Age savages. There is a myth that tells us the Indians lived in a utopian peace and harmony, which was then ruined by Columbus and his fellow Europeans. But history tells us otherwise. War, slavery, cannibalism, and sexual immorality were all common practice among the Indians. As the Spanish would later find out, human sacrifice and infanticide were the norm among tribes like the Aztecs, who slaughtered upwards of 20,000 people in a single day, sacrificing many of their enemies by removing their still beating hearts. On Columbus's second voyage, he brought the first of many Catholic missionaries, and these men tried to convert the Indians from their barbaric pagan practices, and many missionaries suffered martyrdom while attempting to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. And of course, if they massacred the missionaries that had gone to them, then I would suggest that was reason for the settlers to then go there and make war against the Indians because of what they had done. Is that the sort of thing that would happen, Matt?
Yeah, can you imagine being a settler, having just a handful of you, with, you know, primitive firearms at the time, being surrounded by God knows how many natives who know the lay of the land and who know the area backwards and forwards. It's absolutely terrifying. One of the reasons that the Spanish reacted the way they did in Central America was discovering the human sacrifice, the huge numbers of these other tribes, subject people. Some of these subject people existed entirely to supply the capital with sacrifice victims. This is why they reacted so vehemently. And again, if you haven't seen it, I recommend Mel Gibson's Apocalypto. The press tried to bury it, but it's a great movie exactly about this topic and what kind of societies these native empires really were.
Well, another allegation is that Columbus brought slavery to the New World. And in actual fact, slavery was widely practiced by the Indians when Columbus arrived. Reading Columbus's log, it is clear he insisted on the fair treatment of the people he encountered. Upon his first meeting with the natives on Sao Salvador, Columbus concludes, "I recognize that they were people who would be better freed from error and converted to our holy faith by love than by force." And the mass importation of Africans for farm labor purposes did not begin until long after Columbus's death. So it's quite clear here right from the beginning that he wanted to convert them to Christianity. He didn't want to oppress them and enslave them or work them into the grave. He wanted to civilize them and Christianize them.
Yeah, they were not enslaved. That almost never happened. In fact, they were slave owners. These tribes, despite being primitive, were respected by everyone that they came in contact with. The exception, of course, were these huge empires in Central America. Slavery was practiced, as was all forms of colonial domination. The Carib Indians, we have named the Caribbean Sea after them, were one of the worst. The Apaches, not quite as advanced, were almost as bad. These tribes lived by force and violence, and they have no place to stand to condemn the white people who defeated them.
They didn't actually make very good slaves. I mean, according to some of the slave owners from the books that were written in the 18th century, they said that they really didn't make good slaves. They weren't able to copy what the white man was doing. They didn't have the discipline, and they were of the opinion that the blacks were far better suited to the work than the Red Indians. So that was an issue as well. Well, Columbus was not responsible for a genocide, and he did not deliberately wipe out millions. Genocide is defined as the deliberate, systematic, and widespread extermination of a national, racial, religious, or ethnic group. Yes, many Indians died in the initial contact with Europeans. However, any talk of deliberate extermination on the part of Columbus is a lie. Columbus always treated the natives fairly, even when some of his contemporaries did not. Indian conquests among themselves had been going on long before the arrival of the Spanish. Columbus actually helped to establish foundations for the fair treatment of the conquered. So if the Indians were caught by the whites, they certainly weren't going to be tortured to death and scalped and all the rest of it. They would have been treated fairly, and Columbus tried to institute this. So what happened to this fair treatment of the Indians here, Matt? Do you know much about that?
Well, I'm not claiming in any way to be an expert in pre-Columbian America. But, a common claim is that the Americans broke all the peace treaties with the Indian tribes. So people forget that most of the American Indian tribes sided with the Confederacy during the Civil War. So that means all those treaties were null and void. But even before then, overwhelmingly, it was the Indians. We're talking about 1600, 1700. The treaties were broken by the Indians themselves. Only a century later did you have treaties broken by the settlers. But again, this is usually having to do with tit-for-tat killings, raids. It was such a decentralized tribal structure, there really was no central figure. And there is no concept of an Indian or Native American. They were very, very different from one another. You know someone's an idiot when they refer to Native American culture as if that's one thing. They didn't like each other. Many of them saw the whites showing up here as a positive thing. My ancestors didn't get here until 1921. And very few Americans can trace their roots back to, you know, Plymouth Rock. But even Andrew Jackson's Indian removal program had everything to do with stopping the raids into American towns and villages at the time. And again, some of the most violent of the southern Indian tribes. And of course, you notice I use Indian, not Native American, because I was born here. I'm a Native American. It's a stupid neologism that only came into existence maybe in the early 90s.
Well, you point out there that the pilgrims were actually innocent victims in this, and that does seem so. We have a partial review here of Nathaniel Philbrick's Mayflower, A Story of Courage, Community, and War. And this introduction is written by Sam Dixon, and it's actually talking about the origins of Thanksgiving that you were outlining at the beginning of this episode, Matt. And Sam Dixon says, I was very surprised to learn that the Squanto story is actually true. It is set out in Governor Bradford's eyewitness account. The Puritans did need Squanto's help and advice after all, contrary to my scepticism, which I once expressed in an old speech, which now leaves me somewhat embarrassed. They were mostly city folk and not accustomed to farming. They also had the misfortune of landing at one of the worst possible sites for their new colony, a place offering only farmland of exceptionally poor quality even for rocky New England. They had to plant their crops on unterraced hills, and Squanto knew how to bank the soil around the plants and lace it with fish so that the crops would grow even in this thin topsoil that eroded quickly. And the Pilgrims did in fact invite the Indians to their Thanksgiving feast. The Puritans already had it in mind to convert and socially uplift the Indians. When the inevitable initial armed encounters erupted, they got a scolding letter from their clergyman leader back in the old world, telling them they needed to attend to the conversion and salvation of the Indians. The learned divine was unimpressed with the Pilgrims' claims that they were innocent victims of Indian attacks, and he was convinced that Whitey was somehow to blame. And the Puritan colonists pursued the theological and civilizing mission of the Anglo-Saxons with significant success. Villages of what were called praying Indians were set up, replete with churches. And most of these praying Indians remained loyal to the English in King Philip's War and betrayed their fellow redmen by serving as scouts and spies for the white invaders. There was much conflict among the English about these praying Indians, with some of the colonists saying all the Indians should be gotten rid of, and others strongly defending and protecting them. This division among the whites significantly impaired their organized collective response to the colony-wide Indian insurrection. Philbrick recounts glowingly the statements and moves of the pro-Indian colonists and clucks over the evil and vile racism of their opponents, who just wanted to clear the Indians out in toto. So what do you make of this, Matt? I mean, this makes it clear, doesn't it, really, that they were really trying to Christianize them, but some of them they had Christianized would still be savages, and they would attack. So you had one group of people saying, well, we don't want the Indians at all, and you had this other group of people saying, well, our experience with them has been okay. It's the same today, isn't it? We have all these problems with immigration, and as a nationalist, we say, well, we don't want any of the immigration. And then you've got the others, you say, oh, yeah, but it's only one or two of the Muslims that blow themselves up and rape your daughters. And, you know, it's the same thing going on back then, isn't it, Matt?
Yeah, well, this goes to show, as early as the 17th century, you had debates among Puritans about how Indians were to be treated. I'm pretty sure the Indians didn't have similar debates. The Puritans come in with concepts of, you know, basic human rights and fair treatment and everything as an institutional matter. This didn't exist, whether it be the Central American empires or the Indians in the eastern part of the United States. And what Dixon is saying here is that the Puritans were hampered by this fact, because they had a conscience, and that they were worried about this treatment from a purely theological point of view and a practical point of view too. But the Indians did not. And it just goes to show, if Squanto was assisting the colonists so much, and he was just one of many, and assisting them with trade and good relations, what in heaven's name would these people want to eliminate them for? There were some bad tribes that explains why so many of these smaller ones came to support the colonists and become Christians.
And I guess that explains why there are still some left, because there were some good ones and there were some bad ones, and the good ones were fighting on the side of the whites because they knew what side their bread was buttered. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We do hope you have a really great Thanksgiving. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.